This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:37 on the evening edition with Kelvin and Hezril. And our next story is actually still on universities. Before the 6:30 news, we were talking about the two Malaysian students who are headed to Harvard this fall, the first since 2017. So this hour, though, this segment, we're looking at the impact of COVID-19 on tertiary education. Many industries have, of course, been made to move plenty of their operations online, and education has been no different. Though, as classes moved online, new challenges have appeared.
Yeah, and some of them were listed in the Penang Institute's report, which addresses exactly that. The obstacles include whether students have access to the internet and devices like laptops and computers. Those in rural areas might not have good internet access, making video calls and online classes difficult. And overall, those without devices might miss out on classwork altogether and not be able to participate at all.
So the report also talks about why being in university in person, physically present, is important. Universities here still rely very much on face-to-face lectures and tutorials. This also allows students to learn how to work in groups. Students that need to do research are affected as well because they can't get access to labs and might even see their projects delayed as some research work is seasonal.
So it's interesting to see how different universities are adapting. I know, for instance, a lot of colleges are planning to open their campuses in the U.S., even though, you know, they have the highest number of cases in the world right now. Other universities in the UK, for example, like Cambridge, are actually going to do online-only courses until the summer of next year, you know, which I'm not really sure how to feel about that because, you know, when I was in university, I appreciated having the face-to-face interaction and being able to, you know, especially if I was in a small class, it was nice to sit in a circle, you know, in an intimate environment and be able to discuss a book or a theory or some philosophy. And I think it was all part of the motivation, you know, what got me motivated to wake up and go to class. And I think it was also one of the things that held me accountable to do my work, because if I had to go in and turn something or present something, then I had to make sure I didn't slack off because I was responsible for the contents of certain classes, especially in ones where, you know, we took turns covering a chapter of a book or something. So, I'm sort of having mixed feelings. I understand it's about safety. On the other hand, I'm quite thankful that I'm not in university right now, because I don't think I would be able to handle going online.
Yeah, and I think that's the perks of it, right? That constant peer pressure and being around groups does help you keep up with your studies. And in class, I think if you now do it online, it's very hard to tell and see who is falling behind. How do you make sure that as a lecturer, as a professor, as a teacher, that everyone's on the same page? Because you can't necessarily see everyone's expressions. You can't see or note signs of uncertainty. And you really don't see it until, one, the student themselves approach you. But if they're too shy, the only time you can more or less sort of start detecting that is through coursework, is through exams and assignments, which at that point in time is a bit too late. And I think that glimpse into the lives of students in group settings, especially, where you can see into the rooms, you can see how students are, how their home situation is. And unfortunately, I think some studies have sort of indicated that you end up unintentionally making those sorts of judgments about who they are just based on what you see behind in the backgrounds of their video chats, right? So universities, I think, are supposed to be a place where you are not really able to tell, or students can give the impression that you are of equal standing and equal class. But having that room setting revealed to both the lecturers as well as students might change that perception in ways that you are not ready to. So, you know, if you use apps that provide virtual backgrounds, that can be avoided. But if you are on Hangouts, for example, where that's not allowed, that's an additional challenge, right? with video chats, do you actually open up more room for discussion, or would you end up, you know, showing and giving chances for unintended discrimination?
I guess it's also course dependent, because, you know, talking about video conference online courses, I think, you know, for the bigger lectures like, you know, econ or math, where they're like 300 people crammed in a lecture room, it might not make a difference. You know, to be honest, I've skipped out on some of my economics courses and
playing Dookie.
Well, you know, because for those things, you know, I relied a lot on the textbook and PowerPoint slides that were shared constantly, and notes that my friends and I shared with each other. So it almost didn't matter, unfortunately. So, but you know, then again, for smaller classes, you know, I think that's where it'll make a difference. And yeah, it might not matter for those big courses where, you know, everyone's so anonymous, and where some things are so dependent on materials. Because, yeah, let's not forget that some classes, I remember some of my classes already did like online prereqs. And this was back in, 2016. And whether you showed up or not, those pre-recorded lectures always were there in case you were sick, or I don't know, you were out for some reason. But it's interesting to see how this will affect maybe, you know, different courses and different lecture halls and sizes.
Which is what we're going to find out exactly after this from Tan Lin Na, CEO of NT International University and Colleges. If you are a student, if you're a lecturer, or if you're a parent, let us know how the whole online learning experience has been like. You can call us 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:45 on the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Hezrul, and we are talking about how COVID-19 has affected higher education, meaning in terms of operations, you know, how they basically had to transition most of their operations online. So we're now going to cross over to Tan Lin Na, CEO of NT International University and Colleges. Lin Na, thank you so much for joining us today. What has been the impact of COVID-19 on tertiary education, and how has learning and teaching had to change?
Well, there's a UNESCO study that shows that more than a billion students have been out of school or university during this period, and there's a possibility that this may carry on into quarter three or quarter four. So for sure, teaching and learning has been impacted. And I guess the question globally is, how do we continue to drive delivery of learning outcomes for our students in order to not impact a student's academic journey? So specifically in terms of teaching and learning, well, it's definitely had to change. In the first place, this centuries-old lecture-based approach in terms of delivery has been a challenge during this period. There's been an increase in the pace of adoption of technology. The move is now towards more interactive learning, more self-directed learning, and learning which is anytime, anywhere. And to me, one of the most interesting things is that there's also been a move towards the use of learning analytics to gauge engagement and understanding of students. So this is how teaching and learning is actually changing.
So what has the learning curve been like for both educators and students in this shift online?
It really depends on the level of preparedness prior to this pandemic, prior to the lockdowns. And so in NT, we have an advantage. We've actually been teaching online for nearly a decade. We started this whole journey in 2012 when we were learning management system. And all our modules now include at least 1 hour of online learning each week. And all this happened since 2014. It wasn't something that happened overnight when the MCO was announced. And as soon as a student enrolls with us, they will have access to a learning management system. So, you know, the students are able to access resources, they can get materials, and they can use these platforms to collaborate. And in terms of assessments, we've been practicing a mix of different kinds of assessments. So when the MCO was announced, and in our college's case, it was actually announced right in the middle of the final exam week. So, but for us, I mean, with our experience with alternative assessments, we move all the final exams to other alternative assessments. These are essentially assessments that can be done online or submitted online, right? And the aim was to ensure that we were still testing our students' understanding of what they learned. We're only changing the form of the way that we do the assessment. So in terms of our existing students, I mean, these are things that they've been used to. I guess for our new students, those who join us right in the middle of the MCO, what we have done is we have given them an e-orientation, which is really designed to help them to start learning online. And the feedback has been that they found it actually very interactive, very engaging, and not as daunting as what they thought it would be.
Right. And with these systems in place, has the teaching and learning process gone smoothly so far? Have you had to iron out any difficulties?
Yeah, for the most part, it has gone smoothly. So we've always told all our students that should they have issues with connectivity or bandwidth, to please let us know so that we can make accommodations. In terms of a lot of our actual teaching itself, we've also done pre-recordings and also live recordings so that if a student needs to view it again, they can view it. But more important, we've also done lessons where, you know, the students have to do pre-reads. They have to do tasks. They have to do quizzes before they even come to the class. So all this is where, you know, there's more interaction, there's more self-driven learning, and they're essentially coming to the class to do discussions, collaborative work. So, but by portioning it this way, the student actually is able to, you know, utilize their time and also assess their lessons at a time where, you know, maybe connectivity is better, the internet is not so heavily used. So on the whole, I would say that it's really gone pretty well.
Could you tell us more about how lecturers have been able to track student engagement and process processes under the online learning system?
Okay, that's a really great question, and that really speaks to the learning analytics that I was talking about earlier on. So in INTEAM, our LMS, together with a course analytics module, allows all our lecturers, at the press of four buttons, to get a report that shows how each student in their class is performing in terms of access to the course. In other words, how many times did the student access the course? How many minutes did they spend on the course? And, you know, how many interactions did they have with the course? In other words, you know, how many quizzes did they do? How many mouse clicks did they actually perform? Right? And what was the class average? And with all this information, and they can correlate it to how the student is also performing in terms of assessments. And the aim here is really to try to rescue the student who's at risk. All this information would not be available if you were teaching a traditional face-to-face class.
Right, and on that note, how are you preparing for students to return physically once the situation allows with regards to the pandemic?
Yeah, so even before we were put under MCO. We had a health declaration process for all our students and staff. We also had trackers. We also designated specific quarantine blocks in our hostels and actually had a process to record completion of quarantine and release back into normal face-to-face life. So all those will still be in place, and we are also looking at how do we have social distancing in our classrooms. We're also looking at how we timetable in order to have the students not travel back to the campus so many times, because, you know, that then reduces their risk when they're traveling using public transport. We're also looking at sanitizing all our common areas, placing hand sanitizers in all common areas, sanitizing all classrooms. So those are some of the things that we're looking into.
Do you think we'll be seeing a permanent adjustment to virtual learning for tertiary education?
Well, I mean, for INTI, we were teaching online, you know, even before the MCO period. So we've always believed in delivering grads who are future-proof. And to us, being future-proof means that a grad needs to be digitally savvy. Right? So to us, prior to the MCO, we had 1 hour of online lessons for every 2 hours of face-to-face. Right? We will continue this post-MCO. But we do acknowledge that when it comes to practicals, you will need face-to-face to do practicals and to do lab work. So for us, we take this as the catalyst in the sense that with the MCO happening, we think that parents will start to understand that online is actually not subpar, that online actually helps to deliver the digital savviness that a student needs to be future-proof. And we hope that with that catalyst, you know, as a nation, we will actually propel ourselves to be even more digitally enabled.
And before you go, Lina, could you talk to us about the general perception that parents and the public have towards online learning? And how are you setting out to address that?
I think the perception right now is that online is subpar. It's actually a poorer alternative to face-to-face. Right? But what I'll say is that in a face-to-face class, you will not have learning analytics. And in a face-to-face class, a student can sit quietly in class and their mind could be somewhere else. They're really not engaged. But you wouldn't know. Right? While, you know, with online learning, the fact of the matter is that the student needs to interact. And I think that when we talk about online and we talk about this whole teaching and learning, that's one aspect. But we also need to look at it holistically. Right? So it's not only about the teaching and learning. It's also about how does a student get counseled? How do they learn about your programs? In INTI, we do e-counseling. How do they enroll? So we do e-enrollments. How do they pay? So, you know, we accommodate e-payments. And also, how do we look after them in terms of mental health? In INTI, you can book to have a counseling session with our counselors via e-personal counseling. So I think it's really about how do we change our mindset to move into a more digitalized world.
Lina, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Tan Lina, CEO of INTI International University and Colleges. She was talking to us about the impact that COVID-19 has had on higher education and how that's had to, how the industry has sort of had to respond to the impacts that's brought about. And we've been asking for your thoughts. We have this one from Kumar that says, one must also consider the learning experience and not the learning management system only. For instance, a 3-hour lecture cannot be done for 3 hours online. You will have study fatigue.
I get that. But on the other hand, I also think that it's course dependent. If you do a, you know, 2-hour Socratic circle with 10 people and, you know, you're discussing a book, I think I could hold out. But then again, I think this pandemic will sort of reveal the economic disparities because some people might have, you know, better laptops or better equipment and might be able to afford like good microphone. And because, you know, I can't imagine myself listening to a peer who has, you know, bad internet connection or bad feedback versus, you know, someone who has, you know, a good mic and who I can sort of converse with, you know, clearly and normally. So I think a lot of factors are sort of need to be considered here.
Yeah, but I think there is also value in considering, well, if it's, you know, done online, is there perhaps more value in breaking apart the classes, right? Splitting it to maybe an hour and a half, two sessions a day, because, you know, I take online courses right now, and just in my free time. And I think what I've been struggling even with 30-minute videos is sometimes the focus. I have to be doing something else while I'm listening to those online lectures. And these are only really 30 minutes. But that could just be me and my goldfish-like focus. But, you know, I think there is room to accommodate for a lot more needs and desires that students might have, right? The different perspectives that could come into play here. You can let us know how that's been going for you, especially if you've been taking online classes. If you're in university right now, how has that been for you? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.